Hello and welcome to Dateline New Haven. I'm your host, Paul Bass, inviting you to look behind the headlines on the stories that make New Haven tick. Nothing ticks better than Pundit Friday, which are about to begin here in the WNHH studio with the number one pundits in the media universe, like the validating voice of vibification, vanquishing all vanity and vacillation, the pastor of parking ticket palpitation, the dairy free goddess of our grassroots radio operation.
There we go.
Babs.
Babs Rawls.
Ivy.
Did you do the queen wave?
Yeah. All right.
I know I have to do the Aretha wave.
Now we got the flyest news gather on this side of the Fleet Street. The boss of the budget beat and the beauty beat, who was also just seconds ago, editing an article for the New Haven Independent, but racing in.
Ooh.
Star New Haven Independent reporter,
like,
Markeisha
Ricks. 30-page article.
Markeisha's like, I'm on my grind. Right? Messing with y'all.
I'm trying to go to the beach.
we got the behind the controls, we got the famous intern, Sam. We got
Sam is the cutie millennial.
He is part of the family here. We're going to miss him terribly.
When
he goes
back
to school. But we are going to let him go back to school.
We'll let
but
him
you
go.
Don't want to quit school and live this life?
No. Maybe, give him a few. Don't tell you. We got WNHA station manager and Heavy D Donald Trump devotee, Harry Droz, the bravest man in New Haven. Anybody else around? I'm looking. Oh, yeah. We got the banner sheriff, Billy S. Bullies.
Somebody cue the Christmas music.
The sorcerer, Scientific Solution. The just-in-time judge of Jackals and Japery.
Those are all new,
I think. The poobah of unparalleled political passion and perspicacity.
Yeah.
The griot of the grassy knoll. The conquistador of cussing criminals.
Cussing
the mellifluous and meritocratic miner of melody. The plow driver of peace. The driver out of demons, discord, and dissonance.
Woo!
The optimizer of opulence and opportunity. The undertaker of unfiltered utterance.
Gotta
the erudite earl of ergonomics. The executioner of existential enemies. The alchemist of acidness and alliteration. The zealous zapper of xenophobia.
Uh-huh.
The quintessential quipper of quotable quackery.
Woo!
The distinguished duke of diplomacy and detente.
I'm gonna let
the
him
deacon
it
of the dozens, bodhisattva of battle rap, missionary of modesty, mesmerizer of the masses,
on a whole show for
shaman
your name.
Of the shoreline,
yep.
Recognized ringleader
this needs
of
to be a contest.
Repartee.
We should have people submit
the
them.
West Indian whisper of wonk. He's also the maximum media maestro, audacious bold-faced barista, bok chess master of chill, primo practitioner of pop prestidigitation.
Yeah.
Beyond just somewhat honorable high priest of hip-hop, right reverend of rapture, reigning raconteur of riffitude, sanctified slayer of the slow-witted, the never late for supper, decorated, dazzling, and indefatigable dunker and driver of the dinner dishes, Maxim Mixologist Joe Ugly of the Joe Ugly Show.
Woo!
In the morning. Welcome, sir.
Ooh. Yeah.
Welcome all.
Better?
Hello, sir.
Happy birthday to us.
Us.
Happy birthday.
Oh, is it?
It is.
I can't hear laughing.
Happy time number two birthday. WNHH FM at 103.5 FM live stream to newhavenindependent.org. Happy birthday to us.
Oh, my God. 2 years old.
2 years. It feels like we've been doing
this
forever.
I shouted us out on this
morning. Oh, we should have done something.
Why is there no cake?
We are doing something. It's called Pundit Radio, looking behind.
There's no cake.
There you go.
There's no cake.
What's a birthday without a cake?
There'll be vegan ice cream around noon, so hang out.
Ooh.
Just saying.
I'll take that.
This is sounding sweet. That is a birthday celebration. So we've been on the air 2 years, folks.
2 years.
I have to say that my favorite part of the week is Pundit Friday with you guys looking at the headlines. I'm not making that up. I think you guys are the best.
Thank you.
Well, this mixed reviews out there.
And if not, we would not be doing our job. There are mixed reviews out there about people submitting petitions to get on the ballot in the general election and in the primary. So there are all sorts of municipal elections this year.
Oh, Lord.
And it is ridiculously easy to get on the ballot for the general election. And it is hard to get on the ballot for the Democratic primary because of weird ballot access rules. So if you're an Alder, for instance, on Ward 4, you need only 5 signatures from registered Democrats in your ward.
Five.
In some wards, it's 3.
That's everybody in my house.
Now, I am told, we can't confirm until later today, so I'm not going to use names. I am told that one candidate who needed 5 signatures failed because she hadn't read the directions that they need to be voters in your ward.
Or there was just name?
Like, you literally could have gone up and down your street.
And it is, if you want to have a citywide office like mayor, you need only 122 valid signatures. So Marcus Packer.
So I could run for mayor.
Marcus Packer. Oh,
you could have if you'd made the deadline.
So Marcus Packer got
which
it easy. 122
Wednesday.
Signatures got easily validated. We're going to have a general election. A woman named Sarah Ganong, who's running for mayor from the Working Families Party, who does not want to be mayor. She doesn't want to be in debates. She wants to get a ballot line, which in, like, I think 15 Connecticut communities, they have a Working Families ballot line, including all the other cities. But they don't try to win the election. What they do is they usually cross-endorse Democrats who are progressive on a separate line, and then sometimes run their own candidates. They're running some in like Wyndham, but and Hartford.
I actually remember finding that very confusing on the last.
Right, you could vote for Rosa DeLauro.
Because I was like,
Obama,
do I vote for them twice if I like that party?
That's in Chicago.
Oh. But I found it confusing.
So she's apparently got on. There was another guy, but anyone can get on. There was another guy named
oh my God,
Webster and Grant. Apparently he might not have. But then you got the primary, right? Democratic primary. And the rules are so ridiculous there. It's got to be 5% of the registered voters of your party. And there you have to get 1,852 valid signatures to run for mayor on the ballot. And you usually get a lot, you know, get crossed off because it's hard to do it exactly right. So they give you only 2 weeks, which is really unfair. It has to be between the convention and 2 weeks. You only have 2 weeks.
There we go.
So that, I feel, is the other extreme. So Marcus Packer turned in 3,200 signatures, and props to him. He personally got 1,000. And now Barb's met someone who wasn't that impressive getting her signature. But they worked hard, and they don't
was
have
Was not impressed.
They do not have the results yet as of this Friday morning. I'm banking that he's going to get 2 shots at the apple. But what do you folks think about that? What do you think about needing as few as 122 for a citywide race or 3 for Alder to get on the general election ballot? And yet for a party primary, you need 1,852 in only 2 weeks.
It's harder to be on Survivor than it is to run for mayor.
But what are we trying to accomplish with these rules?
Is this a social studies class?
Because it seems like access to the ballot is, you know, whatever. Like, just,
I would argue
to, if you want to run.
I would argue that there should be rules. I actually think that not just anyone should get on. You should prove you have some support. So I actually think the general election is too few because we spend money for people running. I don't think you have to run to win. You can make a point like Surigonon and organize for it. But if you don't organize for it, we often spend money on races where a person isn't really a serious candidate. I believe that rules exist to show some bar so you don't just have like 10,000 people on.
Right.
But then if you make it so exclusive, you're limiting the kind of people who run and the voices. So while Marcus Packer gets
but you were right.
He gets big props for getting so many for the Democratic primary. But why should it be this 2 week mad scramble that most people, what about people who just have some support, will add a lot to the debate, be a legitimate candidate, but can't get
candidate if they can't garner support?
Well, the only reason, now, Tony Harper, remember when she ran in 2013, who was a legitimate candidate, the Democratic Party and Jackie James, her campaign person, forgot to submit the paperwork when she got endorsed.
Because that was one job, right?
Right. So they had only 2 weeks to get their signatures. And really the only reason she got on was because Unite Here was in her campaign and they had 1,000 people just go out and get those signatures.
Right.
It is hard. I think there are a lot of people actually would be before the voters, would be, like, how do you set the bar, Joe?
I remember when Jan Parker was running for city town clerk back in 85, I think it was, and they had to scramble to get those signatures. It just was a strong supporting cast.
You know, right, and I believe that there should be, as I said, I think there should be, you should have to sweat somewhat. Like, I don't feel sorry for Marcus Packer, people that they had to run and get him. It's a good way to get your message out in the campaign. But I think it's in general, I think the parties write the rules to keep people out so they can pick their own people. And I think they suffer for it. I think the city suffers for it. And on the other hand,
but it seems like the general election is the great equalizer then. And if you can still run in the general.
Right. And until recently, there was no general election in New Haven. All issues, all elections were decided in primaries. Right. But now we have 14,000 independents, unaffiliated voters out of around, I think it's around 62,000. So, and we have had mayoral elections, 2011 with Karik East, 2013 with Justin Ellicker, where they actually did make it a real race and it was close. So yeah, I think there are general elections. So I think you're right, Markeisha. Are we overdoing the equalizer? Do people like us who believe in ballot access go too far in saying you need so few signatures for a general election? Or Joe, what do you think? What do you think, Babs? Do you think Henri Sommer should just be on the ballot every time and we should spend money to monitor those elections if there's nobody else?
I think you need to, you know, if you can show yourself as a legitimate candidate, I think that you should be on the ballot. And yes, the money should be supported as such.
Is it legitimate three signatures? Like a certain board of alders, you have to get your mom and your
right,
husband.
Right, exactly.
And your
well, things like that. I mean, three signatures within a ward. Like you said, Bab says she could get that in her house. She's right. You know, I mean, that's easy. So
should you have to demonstrate some real support?
I think, right.
I mean, I don't know about the what you quantify as real support.
No,
because I think if you have the heart and determination, we shouldn't make it harder for you to participate in your democratic right.
Right. So what I'm arguing, Babs, maybe you don't agree with me. I believe that in the primary we make it way too hard, And in the general, we make it way too easy.
No.
Because there should be some bar. There should be some bar so it's not just everybody.
Well, when you say make it too easy, you mean like so where
he's saying that the threshold is too low in the general.
No, but at that point,
like three people.
Even though apparently some people didn't meet that threshold.
Yikes.
Well, there you have it. So
so maybe it works just right.
Once again, you don't know how to garner support.
Because if you can't get three people.
I'm going to use like a Harry Jones argument, though. It does sound very elitist. To say, like, you have to prove that you're a legitimate candidate. Well, what does that mean?
Yeah,
like, you might be somebody who doesn't understand the political process, the way it works at a particular level.
Then stay away from politics from that particular level.
But like you're saying that, but those same people are allowed to vote, Joe Ugly. Are you saying they shouldn't be allowed to vote? Because I think certain framers in this country decided that people couldn't vote if they couldn't pass certain tests
to
vote. So what are you saying?
I'm not trying to take away their right for voting. They're allowed to vote, but when they're in that position, what they do affect a lot of people's lives.
Look at Markeisha holding it down for
I didn't expect that to come out, but it just, I was like, but that sounds actually a little elitist.
It should be a higher bar to run the city. I'm playing contrarian.
Okay,
I'm channeling my inner Harry Jost because I do believe,
but
and quite frankly, I believe we are making an argument, and I might personally agree with your argument. But if I were Harry Jost, I would argue that we're being elitist and we're taking away the right to participate in the political process.
No, we're cutting you off at the voting level.
We're saying, but you could be somebody who doesn't know the process at the level that people who know, I have to get all these signatures.
And clearly we have a president who does not know the process.
And that could be the argument for why you would not allow certain people to participate in that process. But at the same time.
Not at that level. You keep saying the process. You could participate in the process, but not on the level of running things. Because when you're on that level,
I'm not saying you're running. Running things, you're just running for an opportunity to run things.
Yes, but when you get to that opportunity, what if you accidentally win like this clown down in D.C.? I mean, come on, Harry Jost.
Well, that wasn't an accident.
People deliberately voted for that.
We have Harry Jost here. I would argue that Markeisha got it wrong.
We are not going to let Harry Jost give an opinion.
Of kicking black people off the ballot through this Republican scam that's called we're getting rid of member illegal voters,
exactly.
Even though in all the whole country, when they look for people who weren't supposed to vote, they found one Republican who voted for Trump,
exactly.
And no fraud at all.
No fraud.
Harry's for limiting it, like make people drive 3 hours in Alabama just to register to vote if they're from a black part of state.
I don't think that's what Markeisha's argument was. Okay, so
I'm for all people voting.
I'm also for all people having voter ID. But if you only need three people and your mother won't support you,
that lets you know what your chances are, right, Harry?
But at least we will let you get your fair time on Pundit Friday.
If your mama won't vote for you on Pundit Friday at WNCH Radio,
you got problems.
103.5 FM.
Like, Mom, for real?
At newhaven.org.
The dishes.
We're here with the best Pundit. Hey, guys.
Like, you don't take out the trash. I ain't voting for you for mayor.
So there are talking about voting. In Ward 30.
Yeah.
It's one of the few areas we're going to have a primary for Alder. We don't have that many.
Mm-hmm.
But Ward 30 is an anomaly. So it's in the part of town where you have West Rock.
Mm-hmm.
And it's divided in half where you have to like go all the way around to see each other. One half of it is West Hills, McConkie Terrace, Valley Street. Then it's the part that connects that to West Rock is not part of the ward. That's a different ward.
What?
Then if you drive all the way to the other side of West Rock, then would you only get one road through? Then you have all the public housing developments like Brookside, Rockview. They're also part of the ward. So that ward gets sliced in half by the... I remember once when West I covered Rock. A race there, people thought of having a tunnel between, bring them together. But anyway, they have two separate polling places because they're so far away.
Uh-huh.
And we spend all this money to have two teams of people monitor the election. And then almost no one votes. It's usually the lowest, or one of the lowest voting. Like we did it one year, we sent a reporter out to see when the first person was going to vote. And Alan, every hour we updated it, and Alan Appel watched something like 30 wild turkeys walk past the polls until the first voter came 7 hours later.
Oh,
but two
God.
People, teams of poll workers are getting paid all day. Yet, even though no one votes just about in Ward 30, we have three candidates vying for that office. Michelle Sepulveda, who's temporarily friendly with seat, used to hold it. The wife, Tasha James Golson, who's married to Darnell Golson, the former Alder, and Chris Delgado. Any sense about why no one votes there or why three people would be going for the prize?
Well, why no one would vote is because of what you said. And, you know, the thing about voting that people fail to understand, You know, we look for convenience first. We look for convenience first when we're talking about voting. Now, you know, a lot of people do. And that's a problem.
It is convenient and, there, though. They have two polling places.
Yeah, but then it's a level of confusion because now you have two voting polls. You don't
so
know
So do you think
a
1,000 more people would vote if they just weren't confused about which side
exactly.
of the rock to
I
go
think
to?
It's a matter of a confusion. I think people
I
are,
love your conspiracy theories, but I'm not buying confused. This one.
No,
that there are always people saying, man, I'm going to vote today. I'm going the wrong place, though.
What's that?
You're under your theory.
So let me ask you a question.
If you're on the
West Hill side and you just happen to be on that side of the mountain, can you go into that poll and on that side of the mountain?
No, but
vote?
I've never heard of a case of someone going to the wrong one.
No, but that's what I'm saying.
And
how do you
I
know
think
if
there's
not
an, like you were saying, you told me that there's an economic divide in that community, right? Like thinking public housing and people who might be more on the well-to-do. But I don't understand why the well-to-do people don't vote.
They're not well-to-do. I mean, the other side,
or
the West Hill side has
working class.
Terrace. You have working class plus public housing.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And the public housing has changed on the other side of the rock. It's gotten somewhat mixed housing. It's quite beautiful.
Right. It is.
And I agree with you that historically they were quite different because you do have some homeowners working class on the other side of the rock on West Hills,
mm-hmm.
in addition to Honey Terrace. But now it's getting a little
more even.
But they still might have different issues. You're right, because West Rock is so isolated. You just have that one road that goes in from Southern.
Correct.
And you're kind of like a forgotten part of New Haven.
Yeah, thanks,
but
Mayor
I guess
Logan.
I would think that the people running in the ward haven't forgotten about that neighborhood, have they? Like, or do they just people like whoever's running? Like, how do you bring that community together? They don't sound very cohesive. Like they're just like
I have
whatever.
A feeling you're gonna find out.
I am. So if these candidates are listening, I'm calling you because I'm trying to interview you.
And at this point, we don't know if Americo
Karsha.
Is going to qualify to have a primary for probate judge. He had more than enough signatures
really?
Submitted, but they have to be verified. We'll find out later today or Monday.
Mm. So this will be a real push to see what the Latino power is.
Well, he's not Latino.
What is he?
He's
Italian American.
Oh.
Latino votes went for Clifton Graves at the convention on the second ballot first. But now you have basically people at the probate court, the Jack Keys legacy, the judge there who want Americo. They think he'd do a better job. You have
well, he's quite familiar with
right.
the job, right?
Then, right. Then you have African American political
but what
people.
What is his stance? You know, what does he stand on? You know, is he really a true probate? Because a lot goes through probate court. So much. So, you know, it's, gosh.
It's an important job.
It's a very important job.
Clifton Graves Jr. has the support of sort of the black political establishment and mm-hmm. the ward
he's
level.
He's got a swanky fundraiser coming up Saturday.
Oh, yeah. Where's that?
Sharon, I think it's Sharon Grant's house.
Got my
so I have a hard
baby.
Time seeing him losing, but who knows?
Yeah. What he's got a really nice video out that
is that right?
Travis Carabello shot.
For Clifton.
Yeah, it's nice.
Interesting.
He's on the campaign trail. He's getting it done.
It's very
probably
nice.
A lot nicer than conditions at the Strauss Adler apartments.
I mean, how much?
Oh my gosh, let's talk about that.
What's going on? What's going on at the Strauss Adler?
Okay, that's the old.
The owners
factory.
Are suing again.
And it
why?
Was first,
what do they want now? Well,
to keep the folks from developing the Comcast
so that's an
building.
Apartment complex right
still?
By the State Street train station. It's not poor people's housing. It's market mm-mm. rate housing, but it's not supermarket rate. It's not like what Joe Ugly pays at 360 State across the street.
As the emperor of 360 State.
The first wave
Joe is not insulted
housing.
By that.
It was the first wave of that new housing
yeah.
renovating a factory.
I thought they had a foundation problem, though.
They had tons of problems.
They have
it's a Philadelphia landlord that everything they own in New Haven has a problem. The tenants hate them. The city goes after them. They have conditions be better. They don't fix it, but they're raking in the money because they were first there. So meanwhile, because people want to build up this part between Worcester Square and downtown, have that kind of urban living, there were two great proposals for a couple hundred apartments and communities right across Chapel Street on mostly vacant land.
Yeah.
And for years, they've been held up because the owner of Strauss Adler, PMC from Philly, doesn't want the competition. Instead of investing more in their building, they're spending money on lawyers to come up with fake lawsuits to stop the other one. They keep losing the lawsuits. Because there's no basis to them, but they're able to drag through the courts for years while the New Haven's tax base suffers, building up their community suffers, and all because of one greedy slumlord who doesn't want the competition.
And the city has tried to find people to buy them out. Like other developers have offered to buy them out so they just go away, and they persist. And what's crazy to me is that they are so myopic about this one building that's going to go up across the street that they see as competition. 85 Elm Street is getting built. There's so many properties in downtown that are being built, so you already have competition.
Yeah, what is there?
So they filed a new lawsuit this week.
That's not going to change.
Because a week ago we thought, okay,
you know, everybody in that building should just leave.
No, stay.
Well, they're just going to move into the new buildings once their leases are over. They're going
to
move.
No, I think they should. Everybody should just move.
Well, it's going to be years, folks. And New Haven suffers because of... Now, you have every right to go to
Paul
court.
Paul was trying to figure out why I was saying.
Yeah, I was thinking, like, Joe always has a fun one when he does the contract.
Why do you want them to stay where they are?
I don't need no one blocking my view.
Only four stories, right?
You're not on the fourth floor.
Exactly. Yeah, you're not on the fourth floor.
I need to see the highway.
You on par with the Knights of Columbus.
I need to see the highway. I have needs.
Public policy from the view of the.
You're gonna have to move to the.
No, that's such a.
You need to move to the sky.
That's such a
apartment on top of the Union.
About me. Such a Republican stance.
Before I moved up there, trust me, I was all
self-serving.
For the people.
He said, before I moved above the people, I was for the people.
And just think of all those businesses. Think of what 500 new people living on this vacant land right near the tracks.
If it's going to be those micro apartments, I'm just so
they're
sick
not micro apartments.
I need.
These are okay.
I need.
Bath needs a loft.
A 2,000 square foot, no, 2,000 to 3,000 square foot loft.
That's what a lot of space.
We got that for you at the top of the Lexion building. I know, right?
What is the average size of these apartments? Seriously,
I'm waiting for that.
I wrote it. I don't remember, but it wasn't 300.
And
square
I needed
feet.
To be affordable.
Okay, those 300 and 500 square feet apartments. It's just you got people living like rodents. Let's be quite honest. They're literally living on top of you. We should not live like that in a city like this.
People live like that in all parts of the world.
But not here in the city of New Haven.
Not like rodents, but they live compact. Yeah. I mean, when you go to China, everybody lives compact.
We're not Chinese. What is wrong with you?
Maybe one of the advantages of New
Haven. But most things here are made in China, so.
Maybe one of the advantages of New Haven is that we have enough going on that you can have enough market for apartments, but it's not so much that we don't need them to be 300 square feet. We don't need to be that squished because we're not New York.
Right.
I need 3,000.
Exactly.
3,
see, you want to spread out.
I just think it's a silly nuisance lawsuit. And somebody asked a good question, I thought, on the website, which was, you know, can they start their building process giving the lawsuit? Like, this one's like an environmental, like, oh, it's going to increase the stormwater.
A ditch that's going to be paved, you know, from dirt in a little square is going to be asphalt, so they're not going to drain as well.
But like, does that really hold up the process? Like, they already have all the approvals they need to build.
Had it for years.
Could they just start?
They haven't been able. It's been years. They've had the approvals and they haven't been able to build because of these nuisance lawsuits. Because that's a lot of money.
I just think it's so silly and short-sighted because while they're busy suing this one development, more developments are coming online. The Frontier lot or the old New Haven Register lot is going to be built with what, some 400
same
units?
Same developer that wants
same,
to build there.
Like basically right there around State Street. So
I don't think you guys understand.
How is that one development going to be so much competition? I just don't understand it. It seems silly.
It seems like maybe the PMC has a specific grudge
against that developer. Against
there are two developers. It's really all business. Now, there are two projects. And the one they're not suing this time, I don't know if it's true, they haven't gotten in the ground yet. And I'm wondering if I've heard their financing might not be strong. The one they're going after.
But you find all them lawsuits is expensive.
Right. So the one that they're suing again is a very strong developer, Fairfield County, who, as you said, has already gotten approvals and is building down the street at Audubon Street. So you know, it's just amazing how one greedy out-of-town landlord who's been plaguing our city can stop us from building.
And I'm totally against all of that, believe me. But you guys you have no idea about the power of the view.
Well, you know, whoever's living there will be able to walk crawfish etouffee. What is that?
Yes.
What is crawfish etouffee?
What? I don't know.
No, crawfish etouffee.
Etouffee.
What is it?
Yeah, what is that?
What is it?
I could tell by the accent it's something to do with New Orleans.
It's a very New Orleans dish.
Oh, okay. Where is this place?
Yeah, did you eat it
in the Ninth Square? No, so they were just doing like light appetizers.
I think we're going there tonight. We're going tonight. I think we might go for tonight.
but catfish nuggets, bang!
So where is this place?
So it's in Ninth Square on Orange Street, right there at
the corner.
Used to be Nini's, the little Italian bistro.
What's it called now?
Amoy's.
Amoy's. So it's New Orleans food.
It's pretty in there too.
Mm-hmm. A lovely space.
And Marquise said the woman who ran it at the corner of Orange and Crown. And the woman who started it, it works in the city government and has helped other people start businesses. And then she got trained in how to start her own business, right? This sort of lifelong dream. What's the woman's name?
Her name is Amoy Brown. Kong Brown.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And now she has a husband, Phil Brown, is a longtime jazz musician. Are they going to have
who
music?
Who was on my show? And I had him on my show, one of my early shows.
Is he going to be performing this place? Are they going to have music too?
They said they would have some live music on occasion. So, and on it'll be soft jazz on a Cajun.
Okay, the other thing that's new in New Haven, besides that place, is that we finally got the approval for Joe Ugly's favorite project in town.
What?
Bikes.
Bikes. They're going to have a 2 million mile cycle track.
Yes.
Protected, meaning yes! it's not a bike lane that's painted.
What is there, a tax fund that you're excited about?
There's a physical barrier so that when Harry's zooming down Elm Street,
he won't hit you for
Edgewood
50
Avenue
points.
Into town, he can't run over the bicyclist unless he hops it.
Seriously, they're coming. Oh, okay. Can I?
It's
just
It's going to go from Forest Road to Park Street. It's going to be the first protected bike lane of its sort, cycle track, two-way in the state.
Oh, okay.
And some people were against it, and the city did this great job of redesigning parts in response to where neighbors were concerned about, like, losing parking in outside a coffee shop in Westville. It was really interesting to watch that process work through, and now it's ready to go, and the state's paying for it.
Well, here's the deal. I had a meeting in Westville last week. And I decided that I was going to ride my bike out to the meeting. I'm going green. Yeah. That was me. I went riding my bike all the way on out to Westville.
You almost ran me over.
Walking. There you go. I was moving kind of slow. But anyway, but I'm coming back. And I say, okay, I'm going to take the bike trail. I hit Edgewood Avenue. And then I get all the way to Park Street, which it tells me to go straight, which it should have sent me towards Broadway somewhere on Howell Street. But I got all the way to Park Street. And then I got to go across Chapel down to George Street in order to come back. By the time I got to Chapel Street, there's a kid who's, you know, the kids in their wheelies going in the opposite direction.
So, in other words, you follow the laws, you never ride against traffic.
But the thing is, I was following the law.
I salute you.
But that's a problem.
I would never take that long way around.
Exactly.
I cut through the Yale Cabaret, walk my bike if necessary, go to Chapel Street. I ride on the sidewalk for two because the one-way streets are crazy. I go on the sidewalk for
it
two
blocks.
It
is so crazy. I never understood. Who came up with that design?
In the early urban renewals in the mid-century, we wanted to get people, 20th century, we wanted to get people in and out of New Haven as fast as possible in their car. That was policy.
No, so I'm talking about the bike trail.
There's no trail there yet.
Well, the bike route.
Yeah. That's on streets. The reason you were stuck is because we have these crazy patchwork of one-way streets downtown.
I agree with you.
In the mid-20th century, we wanted to get cars in and out of town fast.
The two one-ways, it makes no sense. It should be one way in each direction, one after the other. Two roads going in the same direction, one ways. It's just ridiculous.
But we are going in the same direction on Pundit Friday at WNHH Radio, your home for community radio, 103.5 FM, live streamed at newhavenindependent.org. We got the best pundits in the universe.
By the way, we got the best bike trail here out of the city of New Haven, too. The Farm Temple Now. I love that trail. I ride it every day.
That is a good trail.
A good trail.
Every day.
Really?
Yeah.
You do 10 miles a day?
From my building to Skiff Street on the trail, which is in Hamden, and up there is 5 1/4 miles to Fifth Street. So I do 10 1/2.
Good man. You're looking good.
I'm borrowing the looks right now.
And you're doing better than the Goodrich boys.
Oh, so better.
That's New Hallville.
I passed through there on the bike trail, by the way.
New Hallville Ledge Gang.
Yes. Oh, no.
Six members.
Is that the gang?
Yep.
GSP. Six got arrested this week for attempted murder, bunch of shootings, and drug dealings. And it was federal and local cops working together in something called Project Longevity. Mm-hmm. And they're saying this is how it's supposed to work. We get the, because they say sometimes we did these big roundups like the Bloodline roundup in 2011. Right. Then they got 100 people. And when you really looked at it close, they weren't all kingpins on federal charges. Some people were running things. Some people were making like no money running a few bags. This time they said we were able to, because we're working very closely with data that we share federal and local, and we meet every day, 4 days a week, the people who investigate all these people so they share the info, that we really targeted the six. And they say that worked really well. Mm-hmm. Project Longevity has been working well, but it's somewhat endangered, as Alan Pell wrote this week, because state kind of helped make it happen too, and they funded a position. The guy who runs is Stacy Spell. He's a retired detective who's a community organizer in West River. Everyone loves him. He works with the kids in trouble and tries to get them a way out before they get arrested. He's been working for free for weeks now because the state hasn't come through the money because they haven't passed the budget. So in the same week we were celebrating the success of Project Longevity and getting the Goodrich boys, a street gang, they also, they're having this guy on a precipice who's key to the project's not just locking people up, but offering people a way out. Do you think that's been a real part of Project Longevity? We know they offer the help. Do you think the kids usually take it, or is that just window dressing, or just offering the opportunity, whether or not they do?
I don't know. I don't know. How do they track the success of this?
Well, when we've asked for statistics in the past, there were not that many people who took them up on the offer. But if the offer's there and some do, I do think it counts. I watched Stacy Spell passionately when they bring the kids in for call-in, say, here's the evidence we have on you, here's the mom who lost her kid when the kid got shot, we really want to help you get job training, education, and an apartment, but this is like your last chance. Most of them don't take it, although I saw the people relate to Stacey.
Well, I mean, I think, Paul, you know, we have got to change our mind a little bit or a lot about what we deem successful. And it can't always just be numbers.
The data,
The fact that an organization exists and is there and is readily available has to really be the notion that this is what success is, that we have the ability to offer this.
Thank you so
and
much,
if
Beth.
A kid,
thank you so if much some, for saying
and if
this.
Everybody knows, then people can funnel kids there. But the other piece is that it takes time to build trust in communities with young people.
Right.
Just because you put it up there today doesn't mean kids are going to run to it tomorrow. They have got to know that you are about
being there for the
long haul.
And a lot of times it's like people ignore the basic needs of these kids. Basic needs such as food. I have to run through food on kids every single day.
And we don't think about how hungry kids are.
They're hungry. I ask every day, when's the last time you eat? You see a kid look at you and say,
not to cut you off. Though.
But you're going to. But I'm
just shocked that that federal agencies could actually work with local cops to get these guys.
He's talking about immigration.
I'm shocked. I'm shocked that actually
Well, Harry,
works.
The difference is they're on the same page about what they're doing.
Thank you.
There's a fundamental disagreement about what's the right way to handle immigration.
And this is a very good question on Harry's part. So I think let's explore it because I do think it's a very legitimate question. Mm-hmm. So on immigration, the argument local cops make is that they have to trust the local cops, the immigrants, or we can't solve crimes. Mm-hmm. And that police chiefs, some of whom were really dyed-in-the-wool Donald Trump supporters, they said our cities got safer, fewer people got shot and robbed. Once we didn't get involved in immigration, the immigrants knew it and they trusted us and worked with us. So we don't have the same mission as the feds. Although if the feds tell us someone's violent and they can prove it, of course we're going to help them, and no one disagrees with that. On the drug cases, they felt that because federal charges are more serious, that gives them more of the local cops feel that that'll help get the drug dealers, because the tools feds have to investigate are better than those available to local cops. Pooling resources helps them solve those cases.
But it's
do you really not think there's a, and I do think it's a fair question, Harry, you really don't agree that there's a difference in those missions?
Not really. When you're saying that the local cops, it's not their job to even worry about what the federal agencies want. But when it's conveniently...
It's not convenient.
When it conveniently aligns with what you guys want, you're there.
He is right that in one case we're saying federal law is part of a job, not the
Orange
other. But
apples.
Here's the thing, Harry, that I don't get. Pro-Trump police chiefs across the country are disagreeing with you.
Right.
Pro-Trump police chiefs...
And I'll tell you why
people
in a second.
Endorse Donald Trump, say, we're doing this every day. Our officers are lives at risk. We're keeping the public safe. And they're saying that on the ground, you're wrong, Harry. Mm-hmm. They're saying that on the ground, this is how we do jobs. Are you telling pro-Trump police chiefs they're wrong about how they do their job and therefore they should do it the way you want to?
Yeah, because police chiefs are political, right? And they're worried.
You can't
about,
win with this guy.
They're worried about how.
But wouldn't this be bad for them politically? Police chiefs need federal funding.
Thank you.
They need federal funding to do a lot of the things that they want to do locally.
And
so
they're
if they're in, and they're like, we support Trump, but we think he's wrong on this issue.
Because I always hear the immigrants actually won't go to the police and they help the police. I want to see the statistics of the information brought to the police by the illegal immigrants.
I have covered these cases. I've met the immigrants. I've met the cop. And there is no question. And every cop says their crime went down as a result. Every chief.
Why? Because immigration wasn't enforced? That's insane.
Because at first the people were scared to talk to them. And that when they found out they weren't going to get arrested and the word got out, then they felt they could come forward.
Right. That's the statistics I want to see. Not just one case. You go, this guy got mugged.
What would be satisfying? Like, how many cases would you need to see? Would it have to be 500?
No. As many as going to help him make it.
Because I get a sense that it really wouldn't matter if it were 1,000.
No, but Harry Jones usually argues against statistics and evidence-based arguments, saying that everyone cooks them. like yesterday when we argued how all the studies are showing that low-skilled jobs actually go up, not down, when you have low-skilled immigration come in. But he said, but that doesn't make intuitive sense. I don't care what the numbers are. But now he wants invented numbers that goes against what every police chief in America is saying.
You brought it up, Paul, so let's go into economics, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh Lord.
So just think about this. So let's just say there are 30 immigrants who have jobs, right, who are getting paid at 50% of what they would pay a union worker or something like that, right? Now, you grab all those immigrants and you deport them. Now, 15 people take over those jobs. You no longer have 30, but they're 15 Americans. Now, you're counting 15 jobs lost. But that's not
somebody
true.
Better tell okay. those farmers.
So in the study,
right, whose crops are rotting in the farms? Oh, okay,
and the vineyards.
The studies came out from conservative, moderate, and liberal economists. They all said that what more often happened in those cases was the jobs got mechanized or they got left wanted. But when low-skilled immigrants came in, more jobs were created because a greater market was created. They became dishwashers. There were more restaurant jobs up front. There were more customers going to the stores to hire the people to work at.
But they're not creating American jobs. They're creating low-paying jobs.
What, they wash the dishes in Mexico and
no, it was the front.
Over.
It was the
what
front
mean,
of the restaurant.
American
it was the
job.
Waiter.
No.
Was it's, the American?
But
job.
What about the it's waiters who? What about
he's saying they're not jobs
waiters.
For Americans?
No,
they
about,
are. They support.
I'm just saying that's what Harry's saying. I'm not saying that's true.
But wait a minute, Harry. What about like Paul just said, the waiters who get jobs, the bartenders, the, you know, more jobs go into the front.
Because part of what the study said is that the immigrants couldn't take the jobs. We have to speak English to other people. So
this guy
want to
roll the car
jobs.
Without ties.
Well, look, separate from immigration.
You need a tie.
I want to take.
And we're also
here.
Talking about people who have come to the country to be productive. Like we've shifted from the criminal element to people who aren't criminal. And I personally don't. I'd rather my police force not be worried about somebody's immigration status. Oh, by the way, for somebody who's been here for 20 years working and doing nothing else right. wrong other than having entered this country illegally or having had their visa expire while they're here. There's priorities, right? Like this is what government has to always be about, which is priorities. We can't do everything. Right. And there's a little boy got shot in our town and is dead. I'm worried about whether we have enough resources to go look for his killers. Whoa. I care less about somebody who's here illegally. I just do. Unless they're responsible for killing that kid, I don't care.
That's what I was just going to say. You could
I don't care.
Yeah, I agree with you.
All right, we have agreement here.
I feel like I've accomplished something. Like Harry's like, all right, we're done.
When Marquisha gets going, there is no point in even.
That's right.
Don't even try.
On WNHH.com/5M, Bob's team.
Because Congress shall make no law.
First Amendment Friday.
She's going to.
So, bets, folks.
Uh-oh.
Luis Casanova's assistant chief.
Oh,
he's always been.
Yo, have y'all seen the cartoon today?
The chief, Anthony Campbell.
Oh, look on the website.
Along. Casanova won that job. This week, Anthony Campbell put him not on discipline, but took him off running the training academy after an incident where Casanova disagreed with the decision the chief made while the chief was out of town, which is that some cops who did not follow search and seizure procedures, they didn't need to be suspended, but they need to go back to training academy, some retraining search and seizure. Casanova said, this is BS. They're good cops. Anything wrong. So he ordered the supervisors there to change what they're doing that day, not make it as much as a punishment. Supervisors said, we feel you're caught in the middle. It's a hostile work environment. So Campbell came back in town.
Oh,
the chief said,
boy.
We're going to investigate this in the meantime. We want this chief. There's a second time they had that kind of run-in earlier. There was another incident where Campbell had suspended Casanova. Bets. How long is he going to remain the assistant chief? Is he going to dig in and say, I'm fighting, I'm not going to let the guy get away with
it? If I were him, I'd be out by the end of the month.
Or is he going to take a beautiful
retirement
check, yeah. which is the rest of his life, probably $80,000 or more a year, plus health care, and he's still in his 40s, I believe, and do something else?
He's young. He could go do anything else. Like,
he's decided not.
No, I would retire.
I would take the money and run.
Because I wouldn't want this to sully anything else that I might want to do. Mm-hmm. I would just go ahead and take that
because
retirement.
As it stands, you know, you could just let the chief be petty looking with all of this and just walk.
Well, Harry Dros, who is Latino, has reflexively
defended. He's like, what does that have to do with anything?
I'll tell you why. He's reflexively defended Casanova every time he comes up because he's Latino. Campbell's black, and he's always said the brown guy's getting screwed. Is that how you feel in this case?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
No.
Let me tell you, Casanova should just dig in. No. And not deal with this racism.
Oh, please let him explain because I got to hear this.
Obviously, black against brown racism.
No, we're not going to have no minority wars. Heck no. I'm not even going to
This is a new view for Harry.
No,
Harry.
Harry, if the chief of police says discipline these guys and someone below him contradicts the order and changes what they do, you think it's racism?
Is that not just insubordination?
Insubordination for 500 hours.
That is minority wars. Casanova, I know someone who could give you a good job in a PI firm. Stop playing.
Joe.
No, you're running a minority ward thing. This is minority ward.
Joe, let me roll it back. Come on.
Okay, go ahead.
No, look. I think if Casanova disregarded an order, he should suffer some type of discipline. You know, but obviously, though, we do have a problem
here. he can't even get it out.
I can't even.
But don't
you think it
would wear on me if I were in his shoes to recognize, like, come to that realization that I don't feel like I can follow this person's command. I would retire and move on.
Retire and move on.
You know, we got a few more minutes here. How about Betts?
I'd be gone by the end of the month, though. I'd be like, I'm out.
How about Betts on whether Reginald Dwayne Betts is going to get to be a lawyer?
Oh, my gosh. They do not let him be a lawyer. I'm going to be so mad.
When he was 16 years old, he did a carjacking, had 3 felony counts. He served 8 years. He got out. He became a well-known poet and writer. He went to Yale Law School and graduated, got a Harvard degree, did public defender work in New Haven, speaks all the prisons. He passed the Connecticut Bar exam. But the Connecticut Bar won't admit him yet as a lawyer. The first step is they say yes or no, and they say, you're routinely rejected because you're a felon. You're going to have to come to a hearing and appeal it and show us why you're in good standing. Meanwhile, the same bar association all the time disciplines lawyers who are drunk on the job, steal money, and let them come back. You obviously see my bias. Do you think he's going to? Now, the New York Times.
Even Jack Keys has said that lawyers are the most people who steal money from clients.
He's
a judge.
Do you think, first of all, are you as outraged as I am about what happened to Betts? And do you think he'll
get it? Oh, I'm definitely outraged.
What do you think? There's now national outrage. The New York Times had an editorial.
Well, I hope it is, because you know what? You can't say to people, turn your life around. And then when people turn their life around,
you shut the door in their face.
You still want to penalize them as if they are serving time.
And Connecticut is all, you were a second chance state. You really can't make
just
those
for
two
you
things work. Like, oh no, we didn't mean you. I'm
we
sorry.
We didn't mean you.
Okay,
we didn't really
bet.
Mean second
we're
chance.
Bets. The Duncan Hotel.
Yes.
A kind of.
I love that place.
Charm. People love that place. It has boarders, 45 people who live
there.
They
were paying some outrageous rent.
And they pay like $170 a week or something. And then people come and visit. And regular people.
It's almost like it sounded like it was almost like a hostel for some people.
But, right. And for other people, like the head of the music department at Yale stayed there. He just loved the charm. And they have the oldest elevator in the state that
it's hand cranked.
And that a man takes you upstairs and all that kind of stuff. So now everyone has until November to leave. It's going to be the latest upscaling downtown. A Chicago company does boutique hotels with university themes. It's going to invest and make it expensive.
Because we need more of that.
Yes, we do.
Apparently.
Actually, they say the rooms are going wanting. They say they do. Right down the street from the study, which is the second place that did that, around the corner from
actually,
Randy
right
Salvatore's
next door
built,
to the study, isn't it?
Yep, 2 blocks away from Randy Salvatore's doing another boutique hotel.
People is there?
Yeah, and everyone wants to build these. The tenants I talked to were not mad. It's the first eviction I've covered, mass eviction.
They weren't.
Where they said it's so nice, they actually, at the Harper's administration's urging, hired a company, Glendower, part of the Housing Authority, to help us find new places over 3 months. They felt that we didn't feel we should be able to stay there together. We're very sad we're going to leave because we don't make a lot of money. Some of these were writers or one was a housekeeper and said, we'd like to still live downtown. We don't have cars. We'd like to get to everything. And we love being in the middle of the action. I don't know if we'll be able to afford any place like this again. And we love being here as a little community. But we think it's the guy's right who's owning it. You know, the same family had it for several generations. They're now getting rid of it. The owner's older. We think it wasn't unfair. We're sad, but they weren't complaining.
See, that's real people, man. I mean, people have just got to the point
they felt
life
they were treated right by the management.
Right, exactly.
They felt they
weren't
exploited.
It's about how you treat people in any incident. Where you have individuals who will leave your roof leaking in, like what we had in Church Street South, and of course the people are going to be up in arms. Anyone, you treat people as slumlords. You know, of course you're going to...
One guy showed me where a mouse was running and he used a trap and he wasn't mad. He said the
mouse
carpet's clean.
Probably part of
he said the mark's clean. I've been in other SROs, single market places where it was a pit and he was illegally cooking there and he said they probably know they're not bothering me even though it could be a big fire. It was kind of understanding. Another guy was an older man who had a photography studio. They let him keep it there, very low rent and live there. another woman who came here with no money to live from the South, and they let her be a housekeeper and then live there for extra low rent. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
I know.
It speaks to a community that maybe is kind of dying.
Yeah.
Like where,
I was going to
yeah,
say
where
that.
People looked out for each other.
I wish there was another place that we could create for them. This,
exactly. That was, you know, that created that same sense of community where people could maintain their ties, and that they know that, like, for the people who own whatever next building that they go to, that it's not just a building. It's not just a job for the people who work there to maintain it, that it feels like we're invested in who you are and we care about you. So, you know, if your rent, like if you're, cause you know, we talk to people who are being evicted because they get a little behind on their rent because of, you know, medical problems, and people just don't care. They're like, I'm sorry, like your lease says you need to pay your rent.
So
I don't care that you're sick.
Mayor Harbinger, County Development Chief Matt Neverson say, we're trying to do something in New Haven, which is as downtown real estate getting more expensive, while we're getting to be a hotter city, we do want to include housing, a mix of housing. Other people say if the real estate's hot there, go to a different neighborhood. They're saying, you know, look at the Ninth Square where we do have the mix. Even Joe Ugly's tower has some floors that are public housing. They think it can work, but it's going to be a challenge. They say that's our challenge. How are we going to, the people actually work in these buildings, will they be able to live near there or not?
Yeah.
They're going to make, so here's hoping they succeed.
I hope so, because I want to live back downtown at some point in my life.
No,
well, we got you the Alexion building.
I'm waiting. It'll
don't
come
worry,
right at the right time.
Yeah, the company's falling apart.
Good. Even though they
really
just get some good news
go
that they're partnering
this
on something.
Yeah, they're trying to make it look like they're going to sell.
Oh, I'm going to make it go to housing.
Oh, okay. This is going.
I know the city is like, if you don't stop talking about Alexion.
I can't.
Like, man, shut up about Alexion.
I just figured out the Reginald Betts situation. Figured it out.
Uh-oh.
He should give up his citizenship, become a Mexican citizen, then come in through the border, and then it won't matter what you do here in America.
Thanks for that cheap shot, Harry Droz.
Boo. That
he would be fired from Google in a minute.
Did you just see my face? Yes. You know that's my favorite producer, that Harry.
He is. We love Harry Droz.
The views of Harry Droz do not reflect the views of the pundits.
Exactly. I'm going to think about this next week because I will not be here. I'm on vacation.
Oh, yeah, where are you going?
My wife and I get an Airbnb in the center of Massachusetts near a lake.
Oh.
Nice.
And we're staying with our daughters and daughter-in-law in Western Mass for part of the
time. Awesome.
Nice.
So I'm going to miss you guys.
All right. We're not having pundits.
Right. Be back
all
in 2 weeks.
Pundits. We'll be back 2 weeks.
Pray, okay. Pray for me.
Missing one week.
Oh, you in charge?
Something like that.
Oh, Lord.
Marquisha, nobody do anything
listen,
ridiculous
can't nobody,
next week.
Can't nobody can't run nothing like sisters. At every place where sisters run stuff, it go all right.
No doubt.
It better.
There's no question that. Thank you for joining us today on Dateline New Haven. Thanks to the best pundits in the media universe, Babs Rawls-Ivey.
Hey.
Marquisha Ricks, the bravest man in New Haven, Harry Droz, and the man of so many appellations. Show ugly. We're going to take
you,
it out
sir.
With the Afro-Semitic Experience performing I Wish I Knew How It Feel to Be Free from the group CD A Plea for Peace. Now, we know what it's like to be free. We just got to remember to book our flight. Book it and fly free with us all weekend long here at WNHH, New Haven's home for community radio.